It's special.
I've had Joan Emanchek on.
Any bond today? Bond to freedom, that's what I'm selling. Any bond.
Pittsburgh and...
This is basic civil defense information from the department.
And graduate of...
Speeding along the highways or riding the trains and skyways. Listen wherever you are. We bring you good news.
Like tonight, nothing like a Tick or Stopper hamburger would make me happier with the bacon and the butter injected right into it. Oh. But no, I'm on a diet, so Dieter's Delight plate, cling peaches, of course, on the side, cottage cheese, yum, and a seeded roll. A seeded roll. No, S-E-E-D. Seeds. Sesame seeds. You know, they're, I don't know what possible purpose they serve, but they're on the bun. And they're held there by some magic we don't quite understand. I don't know, confectioner's glue or something? Yes, I see. Oh, right. Sorry. Yes, a Kaiser roll. Put it on a Kaiser roll, thank you. Jawohl. Kaiser roll. Oh, hi, folks. Welcome. Welcome back to the diner. I know it's been an awful long time, and I'm sorry for that, but the diner's still here. I'm still here. I'm James Lilax, of course, sitting at my accustomed place at the long, patterned boomerang Formica counter. You can take those words and put them in other orders if you'd like to make sense. At the old diner out on Old Highway 23, about 18 and a half minutes from wherever you happen to be right now. If you take Old Highway 23, if you take the new Highway 23, of course, it's just that's the bypass. It's going to take you past endless empty strip malls and big box stores now shuttered and lube joints and all the rest of the detritus of the suburban landscape. No, this is the old road. Not much here, but one of these days they're going to build an even newer Highway 23. Take that, bypass! And then, I don't know what old Highway 23 will be then. Older Highway 23. Even older. Paleo 23. Anyway, we're here. Pardon me, and it's a threatening night of rain and storms. We're under a tornado watch. I've been looking at the radar, and there's lots of big red jagged things moving in our general direction. So what's been going on? Well, sorry, I'm just enjoying a glass of Frosty Jubal with ice cubes because it's hot and the air conditioning in here isn't working very well. Just a muggy night. And I love it. I absolutely love it. Some people may find it to be particularly uncomfortable. I don't. To me, summer is heat and humidity. There's got to be some point where you can actually physically feel the weather. You know, you can feel the humidity press upon you. I like that. And, you know, I'm sitting here in shorts, not wearing a thong or anything, but, you know, I'm dressed appropriately and I'm comfortable. I like the fact that it's hot because it means that there's summer. If we're going to have it in its full strength ration, thank you very much. After a week of miserable, drizzly skies and clouds and rain and wind and the rest of it, oh, we thought the entire month of June was going to be spent on that. The whole month's upside down. The whole summer, the whole spring is upside down. May comes before April. April comes after March. I mean, it's just been nuts. But now, it's great. And, of course, we're going to top it off with destructive tornadoes. That's life in Minnesota. But as far as what's been going on here at the diner, excuse me again. The weather seems to have inserted some sort of amphibian in my throat. What's been going on is, well, if you recall, after all those attempts to make money at the diner, they finally found a way to make money at the diner. They get a good chef, the mysterious chef back there. I see him now. Oh, that's clever. Oh, that's really clever. We never see his face, ever. Sometimes he just sort of screws the light bulbs out of the ceiling so that he's shrouded in darkness. One day he came in with like a gigantic Lamont Cranston-style hat and scarf ensemble like a shadow so we wouldn't see him. Some days, you know, it's just a bag over his head with eyes cut out, sort of like the unknown comic, who I believe was named Murray Langston. Hence, not that unknown. Probably, you know, when they find out who built the, you know, the Sphinx or the Pyramid of Cheops or whatever, they'll find the architect was Murray Langston. What do you know? Relative of his. Turned out to be the ancient comic. Today, this is kind of scary. He, if I know my Marvel Comics iconography correctly, he's dressed up as the Dread Dormammu. And if you know your old Marvel Comics, you know that the Dread Dormammu was a leader of a magical realm, and he frequently was the adversary of Doctor Strange. Loved Doctor Strange. Mainly because Steve Ditko drew it, and he had this little thing he did with his hands with the two fingers up and a sort of proto-heavy metal horn and the other fingers down and up, and that would be the sign that he was summoning the six rings of Shibogoth. And that's all they did. They just stood there and hurled special effects at each other. I by the ancient moons of Vishtu, you know. Okay. And then whoever was standing at the end got to go back to his realm, and you know, Doctor Strange would consult with the Ancient One, who was this really old dude who floated around in a lotus position. Great comic book. They're going to make a movie of it, of course. Of course. At least it's the first thing that hasn't been a sequel to something else in some time, so I am keen to see it. Anyway, the Dread Dormammu was characterized by having his head entirely on fire. His whole head was just flames. And that's what the chef back there has done now. He has lit his head on fire, I guess. It's some sort of asbestos mask or some trick. I'm just not sure how he does it, but he's apparently disabled the fire suppression devices. And he's just sitting back there happily cooking. Well, I'm not sure if he's happy. I've never heard the man chortle. But his head's flaming. So he's a strange duck. Now, nobody complained about his peculiarities when this place was making money hand over fist, all right? What does that mean exactly, hand over fist? I'm making money hand over fist. Nobody is ever doing anything else hand over fist, are they? I'm washing my hands hand over fist. Well, that's particularly inefficacious. You got to kind of open up the fist and wash it too, don't you? I'm trying to think of some other examples here. I'm polishing the woodwork hand over fist. People would just look at you, but if you make money hand over fist, somehow that makes sense to everybody. As though you've got one fistful of bills clenched in your hand, and the other hand is just sort of moving over it in a conjuring fashion. By the bankers of Ragnarok, I command thee to make... I don't know what it means, but they were. I say we because I have a... emotional proprietary investment in this place. Been coming here for so long, but I have absolutely no financial connection whatsoever, which was a pity because the place was making money like foot over toes, and it was all because of the pizza. You know, and they went to pizza and decorated the place with the fiasci and the fake plastic grapes and the white and red checked tables. I mean, it was just a total, complete, and immediate hit, and people were lined out the door. The cars were queued up on Old Highway 23 for miles to get this pizza. There was something about it. And then he went French. And I don't know about you, but in this part of the country, French just doesn't do it. Now, everybody was crazy many years ago for Nouvelle Cuisine.
Ah, c'est une nouvelle cuisine, it is je ne sais quoi, there you say.
And apparently that meant little small portions that were artistically arranged on the plate and were new. And that's great because ancien cuisine, you know, tends to rot and stink. Nobody wants that. Nobody really knew what old French... to this day, I don't know what the old French cooking was, except that it probably involved quails and was saucy, had lots of sauce. I had Ancien cuisine when I was in Paris as a young man in high school, and I went to a restaurant, and I ordered pommes frites, please, please, beaucoup de pommes frites, and I got this enormous platter of the greatest French fries I've ever had in my life. But somebody else at the table, this was the Latin club that went over, incidentally, so not everybody's French was up to par. Somebody else ordered pied de jambon. And pied de jambon comes, and it is literally, you know, jambon pied. It's a pig's foot in jello, embedded in jello. Now, if you grow up in the part of the country that I do, you're sort of used to all kinds of things being stuck into jello. This was the point of one of my books, two of them, as a matter of fact. Moms would shred carrots and put them in jello. Mm-mm. Celery, raisins, pineapples, washers, nuts, toothpaste bristles, anything they would put it in jello. It's dessert. No, it's not. It's jello. Jello is never dessert. Jello is a sign, an admission that dessert exists and that this is here to sort of take its place momentarily, but there will be other real desserts such as pudding, etc., later in your life. But for now, you're going to have to deal with jello, which conceptually nods toward the idea of dessert. And there this guy is looking at you know, greasy foot of a pig in jello, and we're just thinking, man, they never got around to putting that in the jello when we were having those suppers in the Lutheran basements. It was French. They were creative. So, you know, there was many a thing that was French-like in the menu. Incidentally, the guy who ordered the pig's feet was me. I don't know what I was thinking. Oh. But then all of a sudden, the menu starts to change. All of a sudden, it starts to get a little bit more, I don't know how you put it, crowdy. All of a sudden, the pizza is still there in the menu, but it's pizza with sauerkraut and sausage. And not a lot of call for that around these parts. And then there's lots of Wiener Schnitzel omelets, for example. And then everything comes with beer, which is really bad because this place doesn't have a liquor license. It turns out it's not actually beer. It's some simulacrum of beer from the Simulacrum Beer Company, actually. They're down the road. You know, traffic starts to drop to a trickle because people kind of get the feeling that the joint's going crowd on them, okay? It's getting hun. It's getting a little too hun in here. Now, me, I show up, you know. I figure all things will pass. That's especially true, with, you know, of course, with the things that you eat at a diner. But I'm a digging this whole German thing, and it's been 2-3 weeks now, so I'm just assuming that, you know, it's not going to get any worse. I mean, it's not like the decor of the place has changed particularly. The waitresses are wearing lederhosen, I'll give them that. They're not really happy about it because they're old-style leather lederhosen, and they have to go over the usual outfits, and they're hot as blazes. And, there's the guy who stands in the corner and gets up on a soapbox and starts yelling about foreign bankers. But, you know, that's the busboy, and he's always had some problems. So, otherwise, it's not too German. Oh, well, there's a moment a little while ago where, for some reason, two of the booths in the back were marked off as Austria, and then one of the tables had a little sign that said Czechoslovakia. They don't have those signs anymore. And, I'm looking at the booth with a Polish sign right now, and it's... anyway, we'll see. So, but it's not that bad. I mean, you can still get a Ticker Stopper burger. You can still get the Diet Delight special. You can still get Jubel. And the coffee's still good, so there's that. Well, let's take a look at the jukebox, shall we? Of course, it's filled every night by this mysterious man who comes in here and puts in songs that may or may not have a bearing on what's happening at the diner. But nothing's happening at the diner. We're just waiting for tornadoes, waiting for the storm. Well, let's see. Let's try W2. We'll be right back.
alle bestehenden Begriffe, alle Völker und Rassen, ihre Vermischung und Verpanschung, höchstes Ziel ihrer intellektuellen Urheber und Führer gelesen.
No. Can you the dial here? I gotta dial this down. Oh, I. What's that doing on the jukebox? I know what that tune is. That's the Aces High March. It's from the movie The Battle of Britain. Exactly, and it's a. If I recall correctly, the movie begins with at the Luftwaffe airfield with Goering coming to inspect the aviators, and that plays. There's a brass band. Welcoming, and that's the music that they use, and it's almost a parody of pompous, nationalistic, Bavarian, jingoistic, puffed-up nonsense. I mean, you can just hear the little medals clinking on people's chests and the Nazi banner fluttering in the wind. But apparently the piece has gotten a life of its own, perhaps because it went to Brazil and Argentina afterwards, and it still is played to this day. I guess just because it's a great, fun piece to play, but it just, to me, there's a story, actually, behind the music of the Battle of Britain. Originally, they hired to compose the soundtrack Sir William Walton, who is one of the greatest 20th century British composers, a man whose work, whose soul, whose spirit exemplifies England, the classic English spirit, which is, you know, dead. But he was the man to go to for this, and they listened to what he wrote, and you know, they looked at each other and they said, I don't know if this is going to work with a movie. I mean, he's a great composer and all that, but this isn't exactly soundtrack material. So somebody actually had to go to William Walton and say, Sir William, dreadfully sorry, but we all love your scores. I mean, it's smashing. It's just, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's keen. But it won't quite do. I'm afraid it won't. No. I wonder if you could put in something. If you could write a number that was a bit pop, that had a. If we could get Lulu to sing a melody at the end, I think we could perhaps have a better sell to the investors. But as it stands now, dreadfully sorry, old chap. I mean, jolly good show with the score and all, but no. It's just not going to do. I seem to have morphed into Terry Thomas, right down to the lacuna in my front teeth. But I would not want to be the man who had to volunteer or was ordered to go to talk to William Walton and say, I'm sorry, but the movie is turning down your score for the Battle of Britain. It wouldn't be it. Now, because they loved the man and because he was so respected, they actually used a little piece of his score at the end. And at the end, when they all come out of the bunker and Lighthaller from A Night to Remember, who plays some guy who's arranging the Battle of Britain, and this smashingly gorgeous British Wren, I think she was, who was his adjunct or attaché or yeoman or batman or whatever they was, they go walking off into Trafalgar Square, I believe, and pigeons, British pigeons, scatter into the sky, and it's a new day, and the Nazis were whooped, and it's a great movie. It's a wonderful movie. And at that moment, when the pigeons take wing, they kick into the Walton score, and it's just Britain. I mean, it's just so wonderfully, and it's such almost parodically cliched Walton. It's just exactly what you would expect, and I imagine that the entire score was like that. I'd still like to hear it. Here's the punchline. The man that they gave to do the work for the soundtrack was actually a fairly well-known composer in his own right, and his name is Ron Goodwin. Yes, Goodwin. He's one O too many to be Godwin, and it would be amusing if the man who did the score for the Battle of Britain, the great brave stand against Hitler and the Nazis, was indeed named Godwin. That would make for a great story, wouldn't it? But, of course, it was Goodwin, so I should probably move on, shouldn't I? Well, that was depressing. I'm almost hesitant to find anything else here to see if the entire damned jukebox is chock full of Bavarian hoo-ha. All right, I'm just going to blindly plunge my finger here, and I'm going to go to V2.
That's more like it. Yank music. Whoop them Nazis. We're gonna jitterbug on the Fuhrer's grave.
This is the stuff that made the brave boys crush the Axis.
Captain Motor fiets en een raceauto en mijn pa is fabrikant.
What?
Maar het meisje waar ik zoveel van hou, dat heeft aan mij het land. Om een motorfiets geeft ze niets en een raceauto verveelt haar zo. En het gekke is dat geld bij haar geheel niet telt. Dag, schattenboutje, dag, aardig vrouwtje, dag.
Sorry, Fritz. You don't get to play that kind of music. I'm sorry, you just don't. That's ours. Do Americans come up with polka band? Well, yes, I guess we do, come to think of it. But is our heart? Yeah, our heart is in it, because we've got a really large German community here, especially in Minnesota. People think we're more Scandinavian, but, you know, actually there are more Germans here than anything else. So, yeah, I guess they do have the right to do swing back in the 40s, but they shouldn't have. They should not have, and they oughtn't have, and I'm wondering if every single bloody piece of music on this jukebox is going to be German. Let's try something else here. Oh, this is a Roy Orbison tune. I love Roy.
Mama,
oh, I love Roy Orbison.
Ich rufe dich an. Oh Mama, ich bin allein, so ganz allein, ich will nicht einsam sein und wünsche mir,
what
dass
have you
ich
done
so wie früher wär.
What sort of foul technology turns Roy Orbison into
oh Mama, könnt ich nach Hause.
Sorry. Put it on my bill. Hate the shooter jukebox. I don't know. I don't mind. Don't get me wrong here. It's not that I don't like the German language. I don't. But that's just me. I have no problem with people enjoying it or speaking it. I just have never really had that sort of fellow feeling you get when I hear Italian or French or any of the other wonderful sibilant sounds of the Romance languages that trace their way back to the Romans, of course, who were a great civilization, and we owe them everything. And I'm sure we owe the Germans an awful lot, too, because they buy bonds and the like, and we're a big trading partner, and they are a strategic partner and an important, valuable part of NATO, and I have great respect for German culture, for their literary talents, for their extraordinary musical talents, don't get me wrong, for their architecture, for that matter. Not crazy about it, but I respect what it is. Not so nuts about the modern stuff, which seems to be the same sort of divorce from any historical concept notion that sweeps European capitals and leaves them with these endless windswept plazas with these strange glass alien craft plopped down in the middle of them that have nothing to do with anything except the establishment of a super bureaucracy, but that's neither here nor there. I just don't like the diner going totally German, okay? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's cultural chauvinism on my part. You know, because you can be culturally chauvinistic. That phrase does not apply to sexism. People are dumb when they say that it is. You chauvinist. What does that mean exactly? Well, it means you're a sexist. No, it doesn't. Chauvin was a soldier of Napoleon known for his almost fanatical dedication to Napoleon. And he had three main weapons, being flattery, superciliousness, and obsequiousness, and also suck-upness. Four main weapons that Chauvin had in expressing his desire and love of Napoleon to the rest. And he became a laughingstock. He became, I think, a word that meant somebody who, you know, really, come on, get over. Get over Napoleon already. So chauvinism is an irrational dedication to your particular side or cause. And it became male chauvinist pig man back in the 60s. And then male and pig dropped off and Chauvin became known as a sexist, which would be really amusing if he turned out to be like the least sexist guy you know. Chauvin comes back from the dead. He walks around and you see somebody who doesn't hold open. No, that would be wrong. Who does hold open a door for a person of the female persuasion. What are you, a chauvinist? And he'd think, oh. So am the lover or the not? Anyway, I don't. It's just, it's my. The diner is not a German place, and I, you know, wouldn't mind except that the guy with the flaming head back in the kitchen there seems to be doing something here. I don't know what it is. The Italian thing was fine because we all love Italian food, right? It's easy, it's Mediterranean, enjoy yourself, have fun. There's no real big, you know, stigma attached to being Italian. And the French thing, you know, well, it's a little bit different there because the French are, what's a word that I could use to describe their attitude toward their culture? Doesn't come to, chauvinistic about their own culture. And that's fine, I respect them for it, but I just didn't, this is, a diner is an American place. Is it so wrong for me to want the diner to be American? Oh, we can have Italian week. Oh, we can have French week. We can have German week. But when the jukebox and the decorations and the guy yelling in the corner and the table start to be taken over and all the rest of it, I, maybe it's just me, but I'd like a little, you know, something Yankish going on here, maybe. Well, I'm overreacting, totally. I'm going to go to the restroom and splash some cold water in my face. This would be an excellent time for a word from one of our sponsors.
When you say that, you said a lot of things nobody else can say. When you say that, you've gone as far as you can go to get the very best. When you say that, you said the word that means a lot to do it all. When you say that, it means you want the beer that's got a taste that's number one. When you say fun, you tell the world you know what makes it all the way. When you say fun, you say you care enough to only want the king of beer. There is the other one, there's only something less, because the king of beers is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser,
you've said it all.
Well, you know, done for the reflection, I think I'm being a little harsh and paranoid here. And frankly, guilty of the worst sort of cultural stereotypes. Just because, you know, the rolls are Kaiser rolls and the waitresses are wearing lederhosen and the Czechoslovakian and Austrian. Oh, now I see the Polish booths are no longer named as such. Doesn't mean that we have to go back to the tired old idea of the Germans as some militaristic expansionist people who are always constantly replaying Wagnerian operas in the back of their head, at your feet or at your throat, was that what they said? Nonsense. Germany is a different, modern, humane, civilized nation, and I think it's just really sort of regrettable that I would stoop to these things. Who knows? Next week, you know, everything will be Swiss, and nothing will have any flavor, but there'll be lots of chocolate. So, just learn to live with it, and... Uh-oh, hold on there. Switching on the TV. It takes a while for it to warm up. It's the Crosley that's bolted up in the corner of the diner. Yep. We've got tornadoes. We've all got to go in the basement. We all have to go to the basement. Right, the basement. What do you mean it's now called the bunker? Yeah. Well, ride out this storm. I'll talk to you as soon as I can. Hope it's not as long as it was before, but we will meet again. I hope. Thanks for dropping by, folks. I'm James Lilex. This has been The Diner for Friday, June 18th, 2010. We'll see you down the road. Just hope it isn't the yellow brick one.